Namo Vishnupadaya Krishna Prasadaya Kutale Srinathya Bhakti Vedanta Swamiti Nama Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravam Charyam Nirvishesha Sunyavam Tasyutya Desata. The meaning of Vyasa Puja is understood in the following way, that Varnam Tisakasat Bhagavat Panitam, that true religious principles originate in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is Krishna who manifests the Vedas in his Vishnu expansion from his breath, and these very same Vedas then will emerge from the mouth of Lord Brahma, and in due course of time, from Brahma, Narada appears as his disciple, and the next representative in the chain of disciplic succession is Srila Vyasadeva, who writes down the Vedic literature. And because Srila Vyasadeva wrote down all this Vedic knowledge, therefore he is particularly the one who makes the Vedas available to the, or Vedic knowledge available to the entire parampara. And therefore all the acharyas or spiritual masters in the disciplic succession are representatives of Vyasadeva. They repeat what they have heard, but not simply what they have heard in a parrot-like way, but they repeat what they have heard after duly assimilating the instructions, following them, and then realizing them within their heart. In this way, the disciplic succession is alive. It is not just a dead repetition of transcendental knowledge, but rather that transcendental knowledge is assimilated, then followed, it is appropriated, it is made one's own, and then fully realized within the heart. I have one metaphor that I want to offer. And that metaphor is that the Vedic literature is the mercy of Krishna. And it is so vast, and it has come into this world, and it stands in this world like a mountain of mercy. At the base of that mountain of mercy is again mercy of the Lord. And this time it is the ocean of mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The waves on that ocean of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are washing on the beach at the base of the Vedic literature. And the waves leave a mark on the beach, a water line, you can say. So, but then, within that ocean of mercy of Lord Chaitanya, comes Srila Prabhupada as a special wave. And as a special wave, his mercy washes onto the beach much further than the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So in this metaphor, already we are seeing the Vedic literature coming with so many instructions straight down from Vyasadeva. And then we see that by the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, things have been made easy. Mahaprabhu is very liberal. He's not demanding that every aspect of Vedic knowledge and culture is followed. And he puts a special emphasis on the chanting of the holy name rather than on someone's ritual as may be found in the Vedas. But then comes Prabhupada, and Prabhupada still takes it further. Still takes it further than Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. One example that to me stands out as the most important is when Srila Prabhupada adjusted the chanting of the number of rounds. In the Chaitanya Bhagavad it is mentioned that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was saying he would not accept any offering from anyone who was not a Lakhpati, who was not having 100,000. So in those days, to have 100,000 meant you had to be very rich. Yeah. Now it's maybe not so much, but then it was 500 years ago. It was an incredible amount. So Lord Chaitanya said, I will not accept any offering from anyone unless they are Lakhpati. So the Brahmanas were very upset because they were not Lakhpatis. But then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained, no, I'm not talking about money. I'm talking about chanting. I'm talking about those who chant 100,000 names. 100,000 names is the same as 64 rounds. But when Srila Prabhupada came and began preaching in America, it was difficult. It was just difficult for his Western followers to chant such a number of rounds. 64, impossible. 32, can't do it. 25, all right. 16, no less. So what happened there was something very remarkable. Because what Prabhupada did, he lowered the threshold, you know. The threshold is that which is at the door, you know, that step over the door. He made it lower. He made it easier to enter into the spiritual world, to go back to Godhead. From 64 rounds to 16. But Prabhupada by no means diminished the mercy. Lord Chaitanya was offering 64 rounds and back to Godhead. Prabhupada was offering 16 rounds for regulative principles and back to Godhead in this lifetime. On several occasions, Srila Prabhupada spoke like that. On several occasions, for example, one occasion was in Portland where Prabhupada said, just chant these 16 rounds and follow four regulative principles and you will go back to Godhead. I guarantee it. He said three times. So, and there are other quotes of similar nature, which I will not mention now because of time constraint. But in this way, Srila Prabhupada made the mercy of Lord Chaitanya and of Krishna even more easily available. On what strength could he make changes? We are speaking about the meaning of Vyasa Puja and how the spiritual master has to be a faithful representative of Vyas. How could he make it, bring it down the standard? How could he do so? He could do so. He could do so on the strength of his service. Because on the strength of his service, Srila Prabhupada, with his service, had purchased Krishna. Krishna felt so indebted to Srila Prabhupada for his service that for him, Krishna will do anything. And therefore, we have that special mercy. Sometimes I'm imagining that the end of my life has come, and I'm imagining that I've just left the body and that they're having a discussion from, well, this Namukana Swami, what about him? Shall we let him pass? And probably they'll say, well, the performance was very bad. I mean, really, it would be better if he would do it one more time, just for his own benefit. Yeah. He still has a lot to learn. Yeah. But, and in the middle of this discussion, where gradually the mood begins to develop that this is going to be the conclusion, someone says, wait a minute, he's one of Prabhupada's party. Oh, Prabhupada, oh, yeah, let him go. Yeah, let him go. That special mercy of Srila Prabhupada is there because he has purchased Krishna, and therefore the meaning of Vyasa Puja is that the spiritual master will represent the same transcendental knowledge as originally was there in the Vedas by the authorized incarnation of Lord Vyasadeva, unaltered. And yet, he may add his personal mercy. And that is the mystery. Therefore, although we are today remembering Srila Prabhupada for his faithfulness and in representing the Sampradaya, we're also remembering how much he sacrificed and how Krishna became indebted to him. And for Prabhupada, Krishna will do everything and anything. And it's on the strength of that that any of us have a chance to go back to Godhead this life. So Prabhupada asked, please, just give me one life. Just give me this life. So many lives you've done what you wanted. Not just this one, just give it. Please give it to me. So with that, I think we can understand the mystery of Vyasa Puja and why we are so excited about Srila Prabhupada, about glorifying him. Not just because he's a bona fide representative, but because Srila Prabhupada himself once said, my spiritual master is not an ordinary spiritual master. And in a way, Srila Prabhupada is the spiritual master of all of us and all of you can say. In our movement, our founder Acharya is not an ordinary founder Acharya. Therefore, we are very happy to be able to glorify Srila Prabhupada on the occasion of his Vyasa Puja. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
The sages of Namashranya, when they gather together, knowing that the age of Kali was coming, they gather together to perform a 1,000-year sacrifice to try and mitigate the effects of Kali Yuga. And when they finally met Suta Goswami, they asked him some questions, and two of those questions, one was, what is the purpose of, what is the duty of someone who's about to die? And the other was, they asked him to distill the most essential aspects of spiritual life and give them that, because as Maharaj was just saying, the Vedas are vast and they're full of so many things. And I was thinking as he was speaking that for us, Srila Prabhupada did just that. He made pablum Paddling is a kind of baby food, you know, it's really easy to digest. You just mix it with water and you feed it to your infant. So Prabhupada made Paddling out of this vast ocean of spiritual life. Prabhupada once told us that if I told you all the rules, you'd faint. And I remember when I first came in contact with the Hare Krishna movement, we had a very simple, small house. And actually upstairs, if you went to the bathroom and stood up, you would straight me, I'm only 5'2½, I would hit my head on the ceiling. And only the men lived there. There was no place for women, it was very small. And when I came in contact with the devotees of Krishna, I had been looking in many places for a spiritual life. I went to St. Patrick's Cathedral on Christmas Eve, big, big place. Thousands of people waiting online to get in, and I didn't find God there. And I looked elsewhere, many different places, and when I went into this little teeny house with a really ragtag army, if you only knew how simple it was when it all began, I felt God there. I saw people who were totally dedicated and totally inspired to live a life dedicated to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And their inspiration was Srila Prabhupada. And fortunately for me, Srila Prabhupada came to my university shortly after I started to associate with some devotional activities and with devotees. And they had what was called the Spiritual Week. I went to the University of Buffalo. In India, that's always a joke, you know. How can you go to a university that's named after Buffalo? Buffaloes don't have much mental energy. But at this university, there was a Spiritual Week, and they invited three different speakers. One of them was Timothy Leary. And I don't know how many of you know who Timothy Leary is. He started an organization called the League for Spiritual Discovery. If you take the first three letters of those three words, LSD, you'll know what he was thinking, that path back to spiritual life, or back to Krishna, or back to somewhere. I don't know where he But anyway, wherever you were going, that was how you were getting there. And then there was another group called, and then there was the Hog Farm, which lived very much up to their name. And they had a commune, religious, spiritual commune, where they lived like hogs. And they also expected to go back to Godhead. And then there was Baba Ram Das, who was a Westerner who had gone to India and found mescaline. And he also had his path by drugs back to Krishna, or back to wherever he thought he was going to go. And then there was Prabhupada, this small Indian man dressed in funny clothes. And he was basically telling us that what these three other people were doing would only keep you rooted in the material world eternally. It would keep you trapped in the material world. And I listened to Srila Prabhupada, and I could hardly understand anything he said because he had such a heavy Indian accent that I couldn't really comprehend it too much. But I comprehended enough to understand that this person was inspiring so many devotees. And my Bhagavad-gita guru was Rupa Nuga Prabhu. He was teaching a Bhagavad-gita class in the Free University. And like 50 or 60 students were going to that class. So there were quite a few, and then there were devotees living at the temple. And they were all bowing down. Now, in our day and age, no one bowed down to anyone. It was like bowing down. What is this bowing down? But everyone was bowing down to Srila Prabhupada. And they were doing it in public, in front of everybody. And that made a really big impression on me. What is this man? Who is this man? What can he do? What did he, does he say that makes people hit the floor? And so I began to look into it. Look into it with determination. And I gave up everything. Within 3 months, I was initiated, I was married, I was out of there, out of the university. I didn't quit the university, but I got to write a paper, a 14-credit paper, that let me finish school. It was on life in a Krishna conscious temple. And I kind of never left. So when you say, what is Vyasa Puja? For me, it's an opportunity to glorify this person who took me by the hand and brought me from animal life to the human form of life. He was willing to make so many sacrifices in order to do that, not only for me, but for so many others. So many others who were so far from even the human form of life. Maharaj said, Prabhupada distilled the essence to 16 rounds and 4 regulative principles. Those 4 regulative principles are completely taken for granted by anybody who was born in a human family. but for us, such an austerity to become followers of those 4 regulative principles. Sometimes you might hear descriptions, and when Prabhupada came to 26 Second Avenue, and then later, I think it was 46 Second Avenue, that's where I'm at. Srila Prabhupada would have to come to the coffee house and to the restaurant to find us. We'd go to his class and then we'd go there. And then it was time for another gathering or maybe even prasadam. And Prabhupada would walk down the street and he would look for us in the coffee house or in the restaurant and kind of look in the window. And sometimes, some of the devotees, I heard them say they would hide, they would duck down so he wouldn't see them. So Srila Prabhupada, he made that sacrifice for us. He came and he saw the world whitewashed. He had never seen snow before. He thought he was going to starve. He brought some grains with him because he heard that you can't eat anything in America. Everything is meat and horrible things. But still he came. And then if you read, now I was talking to Maharaj the other day about how now, you know, when Prabhupada was with us, he protected us very much. He was very careful. And we didn't have a whole lot of competition. Prabhupada's books were put out gradually. When I first came to the movement, there was a mimeograph. Does anybody know what a mimeograph is? A mimeograph is a machine that you type on a carbon, and then it makes an indentation in the carbon. And then you put it on a barrel, and you turn the handle, and the impression of the carbon comes out on the paper. So you can get 20 copies or so for every type edition you make. So imagine putting out publications that way, right? Type it up, 20 copies, type it up again, 20 copies, type it up again. So we had a mimeograph edition of Easy Journey to Other Planets. Interesting concept, right? When you come from the West and you're just thinking about spiritual life, and what do you get? Easy Journey to Other Planets. We didn't have Bhagavad Gita even. We had the first 3 volumes of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And so first coming into the contact of this Krishna consciousness movement, thinking about how Prabhupada built it from nothing with 3 books and 47 rupees or 50 rupees, he built the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. He brought us to spiritual life by his dedication to Krishna, by his determination to offer us the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And a realization, it's interesting, that when Srila Prabhupada was here, I was quite young. When I got involved in the Krishna Conscious Movement, I was just 18 years old, 19 years old. And Srila Prabhupada was with us for approximately 11 years. And I was in Vrindavan when Prabhupada left. So from the very beginning to the very end, I was still fairly young. Even when Srila Prabhupada left, I was still fairly young. And I never really understood, and even now, I don't really understand, but I understand a lot more. My appreciation for Srila Prabhupada and what he did has grown so much over the years that actually now he's more present for me than he was when he was walking with us. Because now I see that so many people, at the time when Prabhupada came, we couldn't read everything. We couldn't go to Lowy Bazaar and get whatever book we wanted, it would translate it, whatever, whatever. We couldn't find commentaries of so many different people, even great acharyas. We didn't have any of that. Srila Prabhupada got all of that together for us, and he put it in a form so that we could receive it. We could receive it. His purports, his Bhaktivedanta purports, are written for us. You read some of the purports in the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, or especially the second canto and the third canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Prabhupada is describing who's Bhishma, who's Draupadi, who's Krishna, who are all these people? The people who were the original receivers of the Bhagavatam, they didn't have to have a purport that said who's Bhishma, who's Arjuna, who's Nakula, who's Sahadeva, who's all these people, Dronacharya, Dhritarashtra. They knew all these things. Prabhupada had to find a way to describe to us a whole new world, a whole new reality, and to bring us into that reality in a way that we could enter comfortably and feel at home and willing to make the sacrifices that he knew we would have to make in order to go back to Godhead in this life. So Srila Prabhupada, with great endeavor, with great surrender, like I said last night, he renounced renunciation. When he was in Vrindavan, Vrindavan was a very quiet place. Kadamakan Maharaj will certainly tell you in my experience, the first time I went to Vrindavan was 1974. And each year it gets more insane in Vrindavan, at least on the surface. I hear from great sages that underneath the surface there's another reality. But the reality that hits you when you enter into Vrindavan is becoming more and more intense in a not so good way, right? The honking of the cars and all the different things going, buildings everywhere, huge edifices, trees being cut down. Parikrama Marg is like a highway now. But when Prabhupada was there, that wasn't Vrindavan. Yesterday I was putting this slideshow together, and because I'm not much of a photographer, not any photographer, I was looking for pictures from other places, and it was hard to find a picture of Vrindavan that didn't have an electric line in it or a telephone tower. But when Prabhupada was there, there was none of that. None of that. It was quiet, it was peaceful, and he was living at Radhadamodar Temple. Before that, Vamsi Gopal Temple, I actually had an experience. I was walking on Parikrama Marg somewhere near Keshagat, and I got lost because the Parikrama Marg didn't used to be as obvious as it is now. It used to wind through the back of Vrindavan, and it was, you had to be able to know where to go to get around. It wasn't like you just followed the black tar road and it just went around in a circle neatly without any zigs or zags. It wasn't like that before. So I got lost and I made a turn, and somebody from up in the building was yelling, a little girl, "Your Prabhupada stayed here! Your Prabhupada stayed here!" So I thought, what is this? So I went inside, and I was at the Bangsi Gopal temple. And this little girl, maybe 12, 13, came running down with a bunch of keys, and she opened a place, a temple. It was like a jungle inside, so many plants, and there in the back, some deities were there. And later, because she couldn't speak enough English to explain to me, and at that time my Hindi was even worse than it is now, I found out Prabhupada lived there. He actually lived there. And then he moved from there to Radha Damodar Temple. And these places for him, they were living places of the Goswamis, living places of the spiritual world. And he left those places. And he left those places and he got on a boat and he came to New York. New York City. Just to give us Krishna consciousness. And even when he saw us, because he was shocked when he saw us, but still his determination remained strong and he was adamant that somehow or other, if we were willing to take it, he was willing to give it to us. Whatever it took, he would help us to make spiritual advancement, just like Maharaj said, I guarantee it, I guarantee it, I guarantee it. Later I'll read some quotes. I had a service for the GBC that at the beginning of every GBC meeting, I do a reading. And it used to be that someone would randomly open the Bhagavatam and they would read a page and everybody would be on their iPad, iPod, whatever, and doing whatever. And then the reading would end and the meeting would begin. But now it's different. By Prabhupada's grace, I put together on various subjects quotes from Srila Prabhupada and I string them together in a way that I hope imbibes Prabhupada's position on certain things. And I read those. And when I read them, there you can hear a pin drop. Everybody is completely attentive. And many devotees have taken those readings and gone back and given classes on them here and there. So by Prabhupada's grace, they've kind of, in sewing, I'm a bit of a seamstress, so when you want to make a straight line, there's a technique where you pull a thread. You pull a thread, and then you take the thread out from the weave of a cloth, and it leaves a completely straight line, so you can cut a totally exact straight line. So I try to do that. I try to pull a thread on a particular subject and get a straight line right to Prabhupada. So this Prabhupada gave us the cloth, all the threads, how we could find Krishna. And if we just follow Srila Prabhupada's instructions, then we can get there. We can go back to Godhead. Because like Srinara Swami said, Prabhupada will meet us and he'll take our hand and he'll put it in Krishna's. And he will help us to move forward even before we get there. He'll guide us. I've had personal experience just recently. I had a stroke. Maybe some of you, I think some of you heard. So that was 2 years ago in December. And I was just in the kitchen. You know, it's funny. We think death is coming, I'm getting old. But you don't have to get old to experience death. Death can come at any moment. It happens even to young people. I'm just letting you know that. So you may think that you have X amount of years together and you calculate your time on the planet Earth and what you're going to do next year and the year after and the year after, but the year after may not come. Just letting you know. Just so that you can't say you weren't warned. So I had come back from Bhagavatam class and I was in the kitchen cutting apples. And all of a sudden, my whole left, right, my whole right side went numb, or it became limp. And then I went to speak, and I couldn't speak. So then I kind of was leaning on the counter, and my god sister Akuti was in the room with me, and I kind of fell over into her arms. She caught me before I hit the floor. And then called an ambulance, and I was in the, went to the hospital. Well, okay, so she said, I don't remember, but she said, all I was doing was chanting. I couldn't speak, but I was chanting Hare Krishna. So the guys from the ambulance, they were saying to me, what's your name? How old are you? What's your birthday? Where were you born? I couldn't answer any of those questions. Akuti said, you failed your test. You couldn't answer any of the questions. So then I went to the hospital. In the emergency room, there was an Indian person. He said, oh, you're from the Hare Krishna movement. By then, I was starting to get some faculties back because they had given me some blood thinners, and blood was starting to go back into my brain. And so he asked for prasadam, and then he said, oh, you're going up to, they're admitting you, and Glani will be your nurse. And so I went up to the room, and there was an initiated devotee. She was my nurse, Glani Nashna. Ah, Lakshmi, what are you doing here? That's a good question, isn't it? And then I saw again and again, even Prabhupada arranged for me a Bhagavatam class. Right next door, there was a 93-year-old woman who was dating a 96-year-old man. And every day he would come with his walker and his oxygen, and she was laying in bed, and she would, I would hear through the curtain, darling, I wait only for you to come. My life is centered around you. Without you, I'm thinking, God, Krishna, thank you very much for not allowing me to be in that situation. And then I went to the... I had to have surgery. So I went down to the surgery room, five devotees holding my hands as we went down. And we got to the surgery room, and we had a plan. We were going to give the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra to the doctor so that if anything happened, he could chant Hare Krishna. So first we offered it to the surgeon. He said, oh, nothing's going to go wrong. I've done this operation 10, 20 times. Don't have a problem. Don't worry. We thought, okay, forget him. So then we gave it to the anesthesiologist. And he's actually the one who holds your life in his hands, besides Krishna. So we gave it to him, and he looked at it, and he said, Hare Krishna. He said, oh, Hare Krishna, I was just on a plane from New York with one of you Hare Krishnas. And that post person was telling me all about Krishna on the way here. I'll happily chant this. And he read it. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. He said, my daughter, she used to eat at the Krishna lunch every day when she was going to school. She wants to know more about Krishna. So then they put an X, a black X with a black magic marker so they wouldn't make a mistake on my neck. And they sent me into the theater. All the devotees had to stay out. And I got in, this woman comes over, and she's wearing a mask and gloves, and she says to me, I want to know more about Krishna. Can you tell me more about Krishna? And that's the last thing I remember before I was in surgery. So then, when I came out of surgery, still more things, someone came and asked if they could buy my japa beads because their mother would like a rosary like that. It was so beautiful. And then when I left, you're not allowed to leave the hospital without somebody to accompany you. So when Akuti went to get the car, the nurse had to sit with me. And she said to me, the last words as I was leaving, she said, lady, I don't know what you're doing, but you have an angel sitting on your shoulder. So that angel that's sitting on my shoulder and has been sitting on my shoulder for 44 years and I hope will sit on my shoulder for the rest of my days on this planet is Srila Prabhupada. Because without Srila Prabhupada, I wouldn't know who is Krishna. Yesterday was Janmashtami and we're supposed to talk about Krishna, but I don't know anything about Krishna. All I know is Srila Prabhupada. And without Srila Prabhupada, I wouldn't know anything about anything. Not how to go to the bathroom, not how to get dressed, not how to eat, not how to chant the holy name, not how to understand that I'm soul within a body, not how to understand the goal of human life. So don't forget that you have a debt to pay. Don't forget that you have a process to follow. Srila Prabhupada gave us a process, and so many things may happen to us in this life. Strokes may happen, marriage may happen, twins may happen. So many things may happen to us in this life. But don't forget that Prabhupada gave us a process, and he's always there to guide you, whoever you are, whether you're the grandson or the granddaughter or the direct daughter. Prabhupada actually said the grandson is more, the grandfather is kinder than the father. So, Srila Prabhupada is there. Take advantage of his association. Take advantage of his books. Study them. Take advantage of his mission. Preach it. Take advantage of the holy name. Chant it carefully. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Yeah.